Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 29th of March. Two very interesting hours. We're going to be starting with Iraq and the funding for Iraq. Senate Republicans, as you know, this week failed to delete a provision from the $122 billion Senate version of the war funding bill that would set a non-binding target of March 31, 2008 for withdrawing U.S. combat troops from Iraq. And last week, the House passed a $124 billion emergency spending bill that would impose a complex series of political and also economic benchmarks tied conditionally to timetables for U.S. troop pull-outs. And this culminates in a firm deadline of August 31st of 2008 for the removal of American combat forces. The president yesterday said imposing a specific and random date for a U.S. pullout would be disastrous. He vowed to veto these bills, and there was a lot of back and forth between the president and people in the Senate and also in the House, particularly Nancy Pelosi yesterday. So we'll talk about all of this the first hour of our program. Hour number two today, Ayaan Hirsi Ali will be with us, the Somali-born former Dutch parliamentarian who is now working for the American Enterprise Institute in the United States. She's under a fatwa, as you know, for the making of the film Submission, which criticized Islam's treatment of women. And the director of that film was murdered. There was a note on his body saying that they were after her as well. So she has quite a story. She'll be with us the second hour. Her book is Infidel. Did I say that? All morning, you are welcome to join the conversation. Our number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Professor Lawrence Jacobs is our guest, Mondale Chair for Political Studies at the University of Minnesota and Director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance in the Hubert Humphrey Institute. Professor Jacobs, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Yeah.
You know, one of the weird things that came from yesterday before we talked exactly about the Senate vote was this presidential reference to these Iraqi bloggers. It just struck me as so unusual. I want to share with you how two Iraqi bloggers, they have bloggers in Baghdad just like we've got here, he said, and he talked about how they were seeing positive change. They're feeling safer about moving in the city. It turns out these guys are dentists who met with the president in 2004. Did this strike you as kind of weird?
Well, it's certainly not a random representation of the views of Iraqis.
Yeah.
We've got polls out there now of Iraqis, and it's showing something very different. So, yeah, it looked a little odd. It looked a little desperate, kind of, you know, snatching at straws in the wind.
Yeah, and I guess they spent some of yesterday trying to figure out exactly who these people were. Oh, the president mentioned these bloggers. Who are they? And we finally found out. All right, now we got everybody going back and forth kind of angry. The president, we got a funding bill. Tell me the story here now. We've got it. Money running out, is my understanding, fairly soon, and yet the president says he will veto this legislation. What does that do for the funding?
Well, the president has said the funding runs out April 15th.
Uh-huh.
And the story on that is there are a variety of different kinds of funds at the Pentagon. Pentagon has the authorization to move funds around in different accounts. And it appears that the money actually will be there into June. The president is trying to set a tighter deadline to keep the pressure on Congress. And Congress is about to go on Easter recess, and they won't come back till April 16th. The president says the money runs out April 15th. It's a way to kind of put them in a kind of a headlock.
Mm-hmm. And then he is saying that because that they're not going to fund the troops here, they're going to leave them high and dry because of all of this.
Well, Congress appears to be on the brink of passing legislation that is going to set some kind of deadline. It's either going to be a goal or a firm deadline, and the president doesn't want any part of it. Now, the key thing here is that the House has passed something pretty firm.
Mm-hmm.
It says basically you've got 18 months to conduct an orderly transition from combat operations to training and anti-terrorist operations. The Senate has a much looser almost aspirational sort of approach. It says we have a broad goal for a year from now, troops being withdrawn. So, you know, there's going to need to be a conference committee. The differences between the House and the Senate will need to be worked out. All that takes time. And then it's got to come back, and it's got to be passed by the House and the Senate. So the president is saying, hey, wait a second, you've got this deadline. you've got to do this immediately. For him, he's trying to create, I think, a crisis over funding.
Mm-hmm.
That in reality probably is not as short term as he's making it out to
mm-hmm.
be.
Nancy Pelosi said yesterday, several times after telling the president to calm down, that we will have legislation that will give him every dollar he asks for our troops and more, but with accountability. What did she mean by that?
Well, the Democrats are attaching strings. They want him to certify that the Iraqis are making progress on the military and political and kind of civic fronts. You know, for instance, the Iraqis have been bogged down in trying to put together some kind of framework for sharing oil revenues. So the Sunnis are not in oil-rich areas, and the Kurds and the Shia are in oil-rich areas. And so the big battle, well, one of the big battles has been, okay, how are you going to share that money?
Mm-hmm.
If you can work something out like that out, some people believe, well, this would be the basis for some kind of reconciliation between the Sunnis, the Kurds, and the Shia. And so the Democrats are basically coming in saying, look, we want the guarantee that the Iraqis are going to pick up the ball here, and they're going to start moving ahead on this oil agreement, on national security and troop development and police development, and they've got to meet these benchmarks to continue to get American military support.
Mm-hmm.
The president doesn't like the strings. He doesn't like he views this kind of guidelines and congressional stipulation about timelines as unconstitutional meddling in what should be the president's commander-in-chief power.
Mm-hmm.
So he's quite opposed to it, and he says he'll kind of fight it out with Congress. It'll be Congress's fault if they don't give him a clean bill to support the troops.
Right. So how do you see this playing out here? What will happen then if he vetoes a legislation which obviously will call for some kind of withdrawal of troops in 2008? Then what will happen?
Well, I think there's a big battle here, and it's really quite fascinating to watch it play out. On the policy issue, Americans have swung full against this war, and the president
right.
is in the minority. We see about 60% saying that they think that it was a wrong decision to go into war. Into Iraq, they want to see the troops come home, and they want to see a timetable set. So on the policy, the president is really in a very bad position. On the other hand, in terms of tactics and the idea that the president's going to find himself hamstrung, and in particular that funding might be denied to the troops, the president is on very strong ground, and you see about 60% supporting the president on that. So there's a bit of a division here between the president saying, I want to have free hand on tactics, give me the money for the troops, and Americans support that view, versus the Democrats in Congress saying, we want a change in policy, and Americans do support that by about the same amount.
Right. What changed in the Senate that allowed this this bill to be passed earlier this week?
Well, what changed is... I mean, I think it's a bit of a kind of overtime story. Support in the country has been eroding pretty steadily, particularly over the course of 2006. You had the 2006 election, and Democrats are doing something they rarely do, which is they're unifying on a national security issue, and moreover, they're unifying in a way that makes Democrats very nervous because they can be portrayed as cutting and running and being weak,
mm-hmm.
and this is something that the Democrats have struggled with politically. What's happened over the last, last couple weeks, is the president made a commitment in January to send in more troops at the very moment that Democrats had won elections that many viewed as a referendum on kind of the Iraq policy. And then the Democrats started kind of working out what could they build a majorities around. In the House, there was a big battle between the conservative moderate members who didn't want to... see the Democrats hand-tie the commander-in-chief, but there are also liberals who said we're not going to sign on and support
mm-hmm.
legislation if it continues to give money to the president. In the Senate, it's much more tilted towards the moderate conservative side. So in the Senate, it really is just a goal. There's, in truth, if we were to kind of strip away the politics of this, I'm not sure why the president wouldn't sign the Senate bill, because there is no requirement there.
Right, yeah.
There's nothing there that he's got to kind of do anything different. It just says the kind of a goal. We'd like to see the troops out in the year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, president, I think, you know, he said it various times that his goal is certainly to see the, I think his phrasing is, the troops step down as the Iraqis step up.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I think what's happened in the Senate is they watered down the legislation so that some of the conservative Democrats, Pryor in Arkansas and Ben Nelson in Nebraska, now feel like they can sign on because there's a kind of a goal, but they're not tying the hand of the commander-in-chief.
Yeah. Today's New York Times editorial says victory is no longer an option in Iraq, if it ever was. The only rational objective left is to responsibly organize America's inevitable exit. This is exactly what Mr. Bush is not doing and what the House and Senate bills try to do. Hey, think about that. Victory is no longer an option in Iraq. That's a fairly strong statement.
Well, it's a strong statement, and I think Americans agree with it, actually.
Hmm.
Two-thirds say the war is not going well. Only a third say the war is going well.
Mm-hmm.
There's now a decided majority who want to see the troops kind of come home. There's just, you know, it's been a real turn. We've been in the war a while, and there's a sense that there really is not an end point. So, yeah, I think this is, these votes are a kind of a major watermark. They mark a major change in where the country's heading here, and it's a real signal that the country is turning against this war. The president is finding himself, on the policy issue at least, very much in the minority. And the truth is, if you listen to what Republicans are saying, they're very uncomfortable with how the president's handling this.
Right. So do you think he's simply going to have to give at some point, Professor Jacobs?
Well, I think he's going to have to give, but I think he'll maintain control of what's going on in Iraq. You know, I think part of what's going on here is the Democrats, honestly, would rather the president continue to get the credit and the blame for this war. They don't want to kind of assume ownership over this war. And so the president portraying the Democrats as you know, kind of opposed to the war, politically, I think the Democrats are probably okay with that. At the end of the day, we'll probably end up with something close to where the Senate is,
mm-hmm.
where there'll be kind of a goal, and the president will have a lot of room to manage the war as he wants, which leaves the Democrats free to come back in the 08 election and say, you know, we stood up to the president, and he continued to manage this war in a terrible way, and we're opposed to that.
So it's kind of meaningless, so really. So the Democrats are saying this, but, you know, they're not putting a lot of teeth behind it.
Well, I wouldn't say meaningless. That seems too strong. I mean, I think it's a very clear policy decision, and frankly an unusual one, for Congress to kind of come out, both chambers, with such strong statements of opposition to the president in a wartime situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a major moment. In terms of, you know, Congress dictating policy in a war, that's very difficult. You know, Congress has got limited tools, and the spending tool and the power of the purse doesn't really let you set policy in terms of deployment of troops and the general kind of footing of American military forces. But I think politically the president is putting Republicans in a very difficult position, even though I think he'll win this kind of skirmish right now.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Our guest is Professor Lawrence Jacobs, Mondale Chair for Political Studies at the University of Minnesota and Director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance in the Hubert Humphrey Institute. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're talking about the House and Senate bills for funding Iraq and also the president's saying that he is going to veto legislation that will call for any kind of deadline here. What do you think? To you in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, we'll be speaking with Ayan Hirsi Ali, who is the author of Infidel. She has this amazing story. She was a member of the Dutch Parliament, as you recall. She's a Somali-born woman who was supposed to marry this guy in Canada. She was on her way to Canada via Germany, and she decided she didn't want to do this. It was an arranged marriage. She went to Amsterdam, took a train from Germany to Amsterdam, and studied, became a member of the Dutch Parliament, and came to really international attention after she made a film that looked at Muslim treatment of women. And the director of the film was murdered, and she is under fatwa as well. She has bodyguards. She is now in the United States working for the American Enterprise Institute. So she will be with us the second hour of our show today. Professor Lawrence Jacobs is here now, and we start our calls with Carl from Madison. Hi, Carl.
Howdy. Professor Jacobs, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm wondering if your memory of that Article 1 of the Constitution is pretty good, because I think, if I remember correctly, there's a lot of additional powers that are itemized there besides the power of the purse regarding war. And when the president claims that it's unconstitutional for the Congress to do this, I'm wondering how consistent you think it is for the Congress to do this. And could you mention some of the other powers in Article 1?
Well, Congress obviously has the power to declare war. Many constitutional scholars and presidents and their advisors that comb the Constitution looking for powers both stated and implied. And the truth is, there's not a simple answer to it. And what we have is a battle over the interpretation of the Constitution. What the Constitution says about Congress's powers regarding military conduct is very limited. And so what's happened over time is Congress has used the power of the purse, such as in Vietnam, to attach conditions and try to ratchet things down. On the other hand, politically, Congress has always been very sensitive to the charges by presidents that they're cutting the troops off that are under fire, under hostile fire abroad, which Americans oppose. So this is a very long-standing dispute, and to be honest, there's not a clear answer to it.
Mm-hmm. How much pressure do you think the president is receiving now from Republicans, some of whom are running for president, some who are running for re-election in 2008? I would imagine that somebody's talking to him and saying, Mr. President, we're just going to have a Democratic House and Senate and a Democratic presidency unless you outline very specifically some plan for ending this war in Iraq. It's just doing us in.
There was a column in the Washington Post by one of their the conservatives who write for the Post earlier this week, and in it he said that he had not seen a president as isolated from Congress as this one going back 40 years, including Richard Nixon. And one of the main points that this columnist mentioned and others have as well is that this president does not seem to take much care with members of Congress and his party.
Mm-hmm.
He's not really looking out for their political interests, and that he's put them on this and other issues in a very difficult position. And you can see, the battle after around the 2006 election where, the president lets Rumsfeld go after the election.
Right, yeah.
And the Republicans said, hey, if you let him go before the election, we'd probably pull out a few of those very close Senate races. We'd probably save some of our House members. Why didn't you do that? And the widespread view among Republicans on the Hill is the president doesn't really care about us. And there is a strong sense of that now. Now, having said that, Republicans are going to be very reluctant to abandon the president because this would hurt them as well. And I think we'll see Republicans largely rallying behind the president and the argument he's making that you've got to support the troops in the field and that this is an unconstitutional incursion by Congress.
Mm-hmm. Rallying even though they know that it's not going to help them politically.
Well, the alternative is to abandon the president,
right?
In which case, the name brand, the Republican Party, would be in a downward spiral.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't really have a choice, to be honest. But I do think, this is going to be ongoing. And probably what we'll see is a series of votes over the coming year that put Republicans, particularly those up for re-election or election in 2008, in a very uncomfortable position.
Mm-hmm.
So the president continues to stick this position, which he shows all signs of. He's going to, really be undermining Republicans, because 08 is shaping up so far to be as unpleasant for Republicans as those
Right. It sure seems to be that way. Yeah. Thanks so much, Carl, for your call. George from Brooklyn. Hi.
Good morning, folks.
Hi.
The first caller took one of my three questions I just wanted to throw out for you to consider discussing. The other two are, I'd like you to speculate on what would happen if Congress passed something that said you must remove all troops from Iraq except for 1,000 to guard the embassy. And the other question is, had the president put dollars into the regular budgeting process, a continuing resolution would have allowed him to continue to spend. And so, but his choice to always come through year after year with the emergency, there's no continuing resolution on that. And I will be pleased to take the answers
yes.
off the air.
Thank you, George.
Well, they're good questions. On the first one about Congress passing legislation to remove all troops, it's not going to happen. I mean, Democrats don't support that. The problem that the Democrats have in the House is the majority of the Democrats would favor that, but that doesn't get them to a majority in the chamber. So you couldn't pass the legislation without getting the support of more moderate conservative Democrats, some of whom have been elected in Republican districts. That's not going to happen. It's definitely not going to happen in the Senate, where you've got, Ben Nelson and Senator Pryor are not going to sign on to that, and I suspect that there would be a few others who would feel comfortable with it. So, that's the problem, is that Congress does not support that. It's too strong a measure.
Mm-hmm.
The continuing resolution versus, this kind of emergency legislation to get funding, that was that's a strategy the president's been using to try to, two reasons. One is that costs have been unexpected in some areas, but otherwise it's been to hold down the annual request, so it didn't look as if we were spending as much money in Iraq as we were. I think that's about to change. The Democrats aren't going to put up with it, and by now the amounts are pretty clear. They're large.
There's got to be, for the people who are fighting this war in Iraq, for those who are the generals, there's got to be some – this is so unpopular now. The American people are so against this. Members of Congress are against this. It's a very peculiar situation, isn't it, Professor Jacobs, where there is not a will to carry this out. What will happen, and we're just sort of delaying what seems inevitable at this point, is that we're going to be withdrawing our forces. In the meantime, people are going to be getting killed, and it's just it's kind of an untenable situation. How do you fight this? How can you fight in this kind of situation? Who are you fighting for?
I think there's two issues here. One is, the president and a number of Republicans don't agree that the war is not winnable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the Republican view. The Democrats' view. There's some reports of progress in Baghdad and trying to bring things under control. So every other day brings back news to the contrary.
Right.
But, there's a concerted effort, and there's now a strategy on the ground that, military leaders have confidence in. And you hear Democrats, including Hillary Clinton, voicing support for that leadership and the policy.
Right.
So I think, all is not lost, at least, according to the views of the military and certainly in the White House. There's another issue here that's very interesting. If you go back to Vietnam, we see a very similar trend in terms of the perception that the war was a mistake. The public, soured on the war in Vietnam. It took a bit of time, but then they soured pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen a very similar pattern now with Iraq. But what's different this time is that souring in the war in Vietnam coincided with a precipitous drop in confidence in the military leadership. And we've seen some erosion in support for the military leadership in this phase, the Iraq War, but it's pretty much stabilized, and there's still pretty good confidence in the military today. So this is a difference. The country doesn't seem to be turning on the military the way it did back in Vietnam.
confidence in the military, but no confidence in the mission.
Exactly.
And not knowing what the mission is really at this point.
Well, again, I think that's open to dispute. I mean, I think among military leaders and you know some of the troops, at least in Iraq, there's a very clear sense of mission, which is stabilize the situation, to train and equip the Iraqis so they can step in and create a stable, secure environment.
Thanks for your call. We go next to Lance from Antioch, Illinois. Hi, Lance.
Hi. I think that George Bush should veto the legislation if it comes to his desk. I think he should demand a clean bill. It's the same thing with Bill Clinton. He demanded a new when we had a government shutdown. They tried to add a bunch of junk into a bill, an emergency spending bill, and Bill Clinton demanded a clean bill because he didn't like some of the things that they had put on his desk, and he held out for a clean bill, and that included funding for the war in Bosnia. Now, the opposite happened with his dad. His dad did not demand a clean bill, and he got stuck with a tax increase and stuck with supposedly breaking his promise. It wasn't his tax increase, but come the next election, they accused him of being a liar for signing the tax increase. And he got stuck with that liar label for basically signing a bad bill. And, you know, this is nothing new. Like your guest was talking about in Vietnam. This is been going on with the legislature and the president for years and years over these things. So he should demand it because he'll get stuck with the label of all the pork that's in there. He'll get stuck with being blamed for all the pork. He'll get stuck if the deadline doesn't work out. The president gets stuck with this if he signs it. Whatever's bad in it, he's stuck with it. The Congress never gets blamed for it.
Professor Jacobs.
Well, it's interesting. I think the president, you're hearing him, as we did yesterday, go after the spending in this bill that's non-military. Just by way of example, the president yesterday singled out $6.4 million in the House bill for what was described as House salaries and expense accounts. Today's Washington Post reports that these funds are actually part of a highly classified upgrade of security in the nation's capital that's been underway since 9/11. So you know exactly what that spending's for. Some of it is clearly for projects, but, you know, here in Minnesota, we got $100 million so we can have the convention here safe, just, you know, the amount of security. There's a lot of money that's been put into that bill that's not military that's going for, you know, projects that Republicans and Democrats support.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the country will probably get into some of that debate. On the bigger issue here about Congress and the president and who controls things, as I said, this is a long-standing debate. Polls show today, though, that there's quite a bit of support for Congress intervening and trying to set policy in Iraq. For instance, there's a poll out by Pew Research Center that says, do you think Democratic leaders in Congress are going too far, not far enough, in challenging George Bush? 40% say they're not going far enough. Only 23% say they're going too far.
Hmm.
So the country itself, you know, because this war is so unpopular, on the policy issue, I think that the president and the Republicans are in a bad position. On the tactics, in terms of commander-in-chief arguments and particularly funding the troops, the Republicans are in a stronger argument. It's not something, frankly, I think is going to be as clear a win or a loss as we saw in 1995. And I know if you read the blogs and elsewhere, everyone's talking about this as an example of how the Democrats are going to get fried on this, like the Republicans did back in the mid-90s. I don't think it's going to be quite that simple because the policy situation is so different.
They're going to get fried. What do you mean by that?
Well, after the 1995 shutdown, where Congress passed the bill, and it wasn't the spending; it was the spending cuts,
mm-hmm.
including cuts in Medicare, the rate of growth in Medicare, and President Clinton vetoed it, and the result was Congress wouldn't pass legislation. The president could sign it. We had a shutdown of government. And over time, as the president used the bully pulpit to just whip Congress and as people couldn't go to parks and other things, the public turned against the Republicans in Congress as too radical. And the argument that the White House has been making and Republicans is that the Democrats are now too far out front on Iraq, and they stand to get you know, this kind of backlash from the public,
mm-hmm.
much as the Republicans got in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm. I see. Thanks so much for your call. Let's go next to Eric from Milwaukee. Hello, Eric.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a comment and a question. My comment is that, you know, it just feels like it's a great tactic for the Democrats to come up with a bill like this to really get it in the public eye and get more people involved with the cost of this war. You know, talking about whether they should control the policy on the ground in Iraq, it's not so much that. It's just how are we going to pay for this war? I mean, you look at what kind of spending is going on, and you look at how much money is going into national security and how much other stuff is being cut.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for instance, the first time in history, you know, in 35 years, the National Institute of Health had their funding cut, you know, and this has never been done before. So my question is, if this doesn't work, what other things in the Congress's arsenal are there to combat, you know, this war that people don't want? I mean, what are people supposed to do? Me as a taxpayer and me as a voter, you know, I voted Democrat, and I want to see the war ended, and I want to see it done in a way that can save lives and, you know, help Iraq. But in the same token, I feel we have a responsibility to take care of things at home. And a
right.
free spending bill to, you know, just go ahead and have just write as much money as needed to finish whatever's going on in Iraq, I don't think that's appropriate.
And you want it ended when, Eric? Are you willing to give this surge some time to work?
That's what I think should be taken care of by military commanders in the military.
I see.
Should be decided.
Mm-hmm.
But it shouldn't be a free ticket. It shouldn't be a free ticket for just spending as much as you want
mm-hmm.
and throwing more money off, you know, after bad, and not, you know, just keeping the American people in the dark about what kind of progress is being done, you know, where money's ending up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think of all the cash that disappeared in the beginning of the war and that's barely talked about.
Right.
No one talks about all that millions of dollars that just disappeared.
Professor Jacobs.
Well, you know, I think in terms of Eric's question about what could be done, I think the level of, you know, public engagement in this war, whether it's protests or it's letters or it's the blogs or it's showing up at town hall meeting, it's being registered. I mean, what Congress is doing right now by Democrats, but I believe within 6 months or 9 months there'll be a lot of Republicans joining them, reflects that strong citizen concern about what's going on. On the other hand, we have a form of government that's not based on the legislative branch having confidence in the executive. The president was elected a four-year term, and he will serve it. He's got 22 months left, and you know, I think there's some strategies that legislative leaders can think about how to keep the heat on him. But ultimately, he remains commander-in-chief and will make policy.
Thanks very much for your call. We have some lines open if you'd like to join us. Here's how you do so. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. We're talking about the Senate vote that would set a non-binding target of the 31st of March 2008 for withdrawing U.S. combat troops from Iraq, and the House vote for $124 billion emergency spending bill that would impose a complex series of political and economic benchmarks tied to timetables for U.S. pullouts, their deadline, a firm deadline of August 31st, 2008, for the removal of American combat forces. And we're talking about the president's response to this and asking what you think. More phone calls from you. In just a moment, I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this time period, Jeremy Scahill will be with us. His latest book is Blackwater. We've talked about Blackwater before on this program. The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. And Jeremy has investigated this. It was Blackwater founded in 1997 and has grown to become one of the most powerful private military actors on the international scene. So that's coming up tomorrow during this time period. Professor Lawrence Jacobs, Mondale Chair for Political Studies at the University of Minnesota, Director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance in the Hubert Humphrey Institute, is our guest this hour. And we go back to your phone calls Catherine from Madison is next. Hi, Catherine.
Good morning. I'll try to be succinct about what I think is pretty complex. I'm just concerned in this whole dialogue about what to do about the funding for Iraq that there doesn't seem to be any discussion of what's going on in terms of an increasing sort of alignment across the whole Middle East of Sunnis against Shiites, and the subtle and not so subtle effects that our various policies, both the public ones and apparently some clandestine ones, are having on that, and what that means in terms of how we should view our current role in Iraq, if that makes any sense. The last caller mentioned the missing millions. It seems likely, and I get this from Seymour Hersh and people like that, it seems likely that some of those missing millions are going into clandestine operations that are trying to manipulate the various terrorist groups and to create a change in the balance of power among a greater divide between the Sunnis and the Shias, and that by supporting a Shiite government in Iraq, we've tipped things one way, and that by working with Saudi Arabia, we're trying to tip things the other way. And it seems very complicated, mm-hmm. but very important to be as part of this discussion. And so I guess that's kind of what I'm throwing out there for the professor.
Thanks, Catherine. Professor?
Well, this is a huge question that Catherine raises, and I think it boils down to what are the implications of what's going on in Iraq, not just for Iraq, but for the region. And the concern that's been articulated by the King of Jordan and the King of Saudi Arabia and elsewhere is that what's happened in Iraq is destabilizing the region. And you kind of just go around the horn. And, for instance, there's been a low-grade and potentially very serious series of skirmishes between the Kurds and the Turks. Now, Turkey and the Kurds have a very long, very brutal history. Now you're getting the emergence of what is essentially an autonomous country of Kurds in what used to be Iraq. If that happens, the Turks have said they'll go to war. Then you move over to western Iraq, and you've got situation with Syria, which is a Shia country. And there's a strong sense that Syria has been funneling some kind of support or has been giving tacit support for Shia in Iraq. And then you kind of go over to Iran on the eastern edge of Iraq, another Shia country. And the fear, and this is the fear articulated in the region and elsewhere, is that if Iraq is tilting, as it appears to be, into a kind of Shia-dominated country, you can have this arc of Shia right across from Iran, Iraq, and into Syria, and in particular of a pretty radical strain. At least as an element of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a couple of complications here. One is that the Shia are not united. There's some very, very significant differences within the Shia, just as there are major differences among Christians. We wouldn't say all Christians are alike. And those differences are sometimes have led to major battles. And we've started to see some of those in Iraq. And right now, for instance, one of the largest military groups of Shia appears to be splintering. And then you've got, significant differences, between Shia who are aligned with Iraq and are kind of nationalistic, and Shia who feel a loyalty to Iran. So I would not assume that the Shia are kind of a monolith. I think that's probably a mistake. Also, I think one should note that there's been a pretty significant change in the State Department, with Condoleezza Rice becoming Secretary of State. And she's invested quite a bit of time and energy and political capital in trying to get the Palestinian-Israeli situation back on track.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that reflects a very keen appreciation for the need to kind of move that region in a more stable direction, and reflects the concerns in Jordan and Saudi Arabia and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the situation is a real concern, but I think it's not quite as simple as it's sometimes been presented.
Anything else, Catherine?
Well, no, I know it's not simple.
No.
That's why I raise it. It seems like it's not really part of this whole discussion. It seems really crucial to, to how the war is viewed and where we are or aren't going with it. I've been against it from the beginning, but, God knows I don't know what to do now. But anyway, thanks very much.
Thanks, Catherine.
Okay. And Catherine, I agree with you absolutely that this war is now really about, it's about more than Iraq. And even though that's the way the discussion is framed, and I agree with you that
that that's inadequate, because it's really now about the region.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a number of people who, you know, frankly, would accept Iraq as a country that's got a lot of problems, but cannot accept the erosion of the situation in the region itself.
Well, why isn't it framed that way? Why aren't we, instead, we get the casualty count in Iraq every day, but we frequently don't get that larger picture, Professor Jacobs, which is more complicated. Why is that?
Well, in America, we're obviously concerned about our troops in Iraq, but in the region, it's talked about in regional terms.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why, you know, we're seeing our closest allies coming out in very harsh terms, worrying about the breakdown of the region and really destabilizing. Well, Saudi Arabia is very precarious situation. Jordan has always been. Egypt has got some real difficulties. So I think in the region, Iraq is seen very much, particularly now, as the regional problem.
Mm-hmm.
The United States, we've got our troops there, and the issue that's being framed politically is about, you know, funding for them and
right.
how our troops are doing, and is the mission going according to plan, or is it back on track, and so forth.
We have lines open. If you've been trying to join our conversation, now would be a good time for you to call 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. We're talking about the Senate vote this week, the House vote last week on emergency war spending in Iraq, and also they're setting deadlines, one a non-binding deadline, for withdrawal of troops from Iraq. What do you think? And the president's response to all of this as well. 800-486-8655. Give us a call. Robert is next from Madison. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Just a couple of quick comments. Number one, I hope the president vetoes this bill. And as far as I'm concerned, I predict that every citizen in this country will say, listen, you wanted to veto a bill that would support the troops because it wanted to make you a little bit accountable. That's got to, and I can't be held accountable for this.
Mm.
Ridiculous on his part. So if he does that, I predict it's not the Democrats or the Republicans that have sided with the Democrats that are going to blame. It's going to be the president. Number two, the idea of adding a little bit of pork onto this bill. God, the citizens of this country are paying for the $500 billion already. What is one or two or three extra percent to take care of what I believe to be a bunch of projects in local municipalities that indeed are well-founded projects? Maybe there is one or two projects that are ridiculous, but I'm sure the majority of them are okay. And number three, to the professor's last comment about stabilization, is stabilization when a good Sunni treats his fellow Shiite in a nice way? Is that the kind of stabilization we're going to create?
Hmm.
I'm being sarcastic.
Right, right.
Relative to regional stabilization, if Syria, Turkey, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia are so concerned about this huge regional conflict, why don't they throw in $500 billion to help the mercenaries that we have become to keep this thing under control? You can comment on all three off the air.
Thank you, Robert.
I don't know where to start. I think the issue on the president of veto, this is just a fundamental political disagreement that's rooted in a longstanding debate over the Constitution and where power resides in terms of the making of policy. And, you know, to be honest, there are arguments on both sides, and I've seen arguments made by Democrats when they were in the White House, and Republicans when they were in the White House. So I don't think there's a kind of the right answer here. It's clearly something that's conditioned. But this president, and frankly any president involved in a war, resists as much as possible Congress getting involved in what they see as military conduct. They see this as part of their commander-in-chief.
Right. But he is also, he's framed this support the troops thing. He's the one who's bringing this up. So he's blaming the Democrats in Congress for not supporting the troops with this legislation. Our caller made an interesting point that they're throwing it right back to him, saying we are supporting the troops here. We're giving you the money that you want, but you have to be held accountable. So it seems to me as though he's in a very difficult spot at this point, that what he has to do is say, listen, it's my, what you just said, this is my decision. I'm commander in chief. I'm sorry. You know, I'm listening to what you're saying, but it's my job.
Yeah, the president's just going to say, you know, you kind of look at the poll numbers, at least, and the Democrats are worried. Because the president turns around and says, you've tied my hands in ways I can't accept. Give me a bill that's clean, without the pork and without this tampering with Commander-in-Chief. And he's likely to find the public, at least some part of the public, shifting in his direction.
What part of the public?
Well, when he frames this as denying funding for troops, and I realize Democrats say, no, we are providing funding.
Right.
The president gets on the bully pulpit and says,
yeah,
you're giving me a bill that I can't sign because it's going to push us into a track where we'll lose, or it's going to signal to our enemies that we're going to withdraw, and that's not the case,
mm-hmm.
and therefore it's not winnable. You're essentially denying the funding. 60% of the country opposes that.
Mm-hmm. But it's not the truth, right? I mean, they're not denying the funding.
Well, they're denying the funding in the form the president wants it. That's the way
right,
he's framing it.
Right.
And what we have is a country that is profoundly divided. This is not a good situation. We've got about 80% of Democrats lined up behind Congress, 80 or 90%. We've got about 60 or 70% of Republicans lined up behind the president on this. And then you've got a group of independent, undecided sort of folks who are floating around the middle, and they go back and forth depending on how the issue is framed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrible situation. I mean, it's the worst possible outcome. And even if the president were to somehow pull a political miracle on this and get what he wanted exactly, it's a horrible situation. He is likely to leave office a very depleted, politically weak president.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, you know, it's a situation that's really just fraught with danger for the country and political damage for both parties. No mm-hmm. one wins this.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. And take up his point before we go back to at least one or two more calls about stabilization.
Well, I think he's right. I mean, we're the regional powers. Well, we're getting reports, particularly out of some of the European press, that the Saudis appear to be funding the Shia. I'm sorry, funding the Sunnis, some of whom are attacking American troops. So these regional powers may be involved, but they're not involved in the way in which we'd like them to be involved, in part because they've lost confidence in American policy in Iraq. They see the situation as getting much worse, and so they're looking for a way in which they can at least support their factions to hold a draw in Iraq and not let it kind of tip into the Iranian camp.
Yeah. Hussein is next from Chicago. Hi.
Hi. I just want to make a comment about the stabilization comment that Professor Jacobs just made. You have to realize that Jordan, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Qatar, and all these surrounding countries of the Middle East, they are all anti-Shia. Their history shows they're oppressing the Shias. They don't give the rights to the Shiite people anyway. They are worried that if Iraq gets a Shiite government, they are going to have more influential Shias in the region than before. Right now, there's only Iran that is influencing the Shiite as a whole, but now there's a chance that Iraq is going to become Shiite. And that's what the whole thing is all about. That's in place since 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Afghanistan was a perfect example when Taliban was being supported by Saudi Arabia. The U.S. didn't say anything at that time. Taliban then went dormant for a while and came back and started terrorism in Pakistan. I mean, it's a reality in front of everybody else. I mean, they should stop and think. U.S. should stop and think, what are they supporting? Are they supporting the democratic people? Are they supporting the people? Or are they supporting the monarchies?
Professor Jacobs, a little less than a minute.
Well, I agree with what Hussein's saying, which is that
stabilization is really another phrase for how to manage or to keep under wraps the Sunni-Shia relationship or domination that's existed for years. Notice, though, how the discussion has shifted from Iraq to the region. And that's not the discussion that's generally going on in the country.
Right.
And not what's going on in Washington.
Right. Well, we need to do another show on the region that's prompted that this hour has. Well, thank you, Professor Jacobs, so much for being with us. It's interesting to watch, but it sure is disturbing, isn't it?
I think it's very disturbing, and I really kind of share, having studied and been, you know, lived through the Vietnam period, despite all the rhetoric, we're right back in it.
Mm-hmm.
This is as bad as it was in Vietnam, or maybe not quite as bad, but it's just a matter of degree.
Yeah. Thanks for being with us. We'll chat again. Our guest, Professor Lawrence Jacobs, Mondale Chair for Political Studies at the University of Minnesota and Director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance in the Hubert Humphrey Institute. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and to John Treader for on-air production. And thanks, as always, for your wonderful calls. You're smart and follow what's going on. And that's good. We will. We'll do it. We'll do a show next week looking at the whole region. That would be a good show. I'm Kathleen Dunn. News is ahead, and we'll return with more Thursday Conversation. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.